What do you mean by the role of the individual, Lord Russell?
I'm thinking primarily of activities which an individual can carry out otherwise than as a member of an organization. And I think there are a great many very important and very useful and desirable activities which have hitherto been carried out by individuals without the help of an organization, and which are more and more coming to depend upon organizations. The great men of science of the past didn't depend upon very expensive apparatus. They did their work as individuals, and they were able to. But take a modern astronomer. I met a very eminent astronomer of the present day when I was in California. And his work, which is very useful and lovely work, it depends entirely upon a certain very, very powerful telescope, which has been contributed to a certain observatory by a certain very rich man. And he explained to me during dinner that, of course, he was only able to do his work because he was on good terms with certain very, very rich men.
How is anyone to establish a claim or a right to use this tremendously expensive equipment?
Well, you can only use it through the vote of colleagues. Fortunately, in science, it's fairly easy to assess a man's ability. In art, it's a quite different thing. A poet or a painter or an architect, if he pleases his contemporaries, is not likely to be an important innovator, and the important innovators have displeased their contemporaries, so that in art it's really difficult.
But may one go a little further into cultural and scientific freedom and what precisely it means and its importance to the community?
Well, I came to the conclusion a good while ago that, broadly speaking, the important impulses that promote behavior can be divided into creative and possessive. I call an impulse creative when its aim is to produce something which wouldn't otherwise be there and which is not taken away from anybody else. I call it possessive when it consists in acquiring for yourself something which is already there, such as a loaf of bread. But the really important impulses when you're talking about the sphere of liberty are the creative ones. If you write a poem, you don't prevent another man from writing a poem. If you paint a picture, you don't prevent him from painting a picture. Those things are creative and are not done at the expense of somebody else. And I think those things ought to have absolute liberty.
Do you believe that cultural and scientific freedom is declining?
Yes, it is almost inevitably declining. Not, I think, in perhaps so much in artistic spheres, but certainly in scientific spheres, for the reason I spoke of before, that the apparatus in science is now so expensive that the man can't, I mean, Galileo made his own telescope, but you can't make a modern telescope yourself.
Yes, astronomy has a great advantage today in that many people who made scientific discoveries in the past were in danger of having their heads chopped off, whereas today you can carry on.
I don't think that's quite true. We don't, as a rule, chop off their heads. But if they get into bad odor politically, as they very well may, they don't have access to the necessary laboratories.
But has scientific freedom and cultural freedom ever really existed?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think it ever has. In fact, the people who make any important advance in any direction whatever have almost invariably roused immense public opposition.
Can you give some examples of that?
Copernicus. You take Galileo. They both got into hot water for their discoveries. And, Darwin, of course, was thought unspeakably wicked in his own day. Almost anybody who makes an important advance is so thought.
Isn't it quite a good thing that when people do offer propositions which may or may not be important advances, they should meet a lot of opposition so that they can be tested, that we don't have a lot of phony theories foisted on us?
Well, I don't think it prevents phony theories, because governments in every part of the world that I've ever heard of prefer phony theories and will promote them. And the theories that are valid will have to meet with violent opposition. Now, I think there is this much to be said for your point. If the opposition is not very severe, it is a stimulus. But if it's very severe, it isn't. If your head is cut off, it eventually diminishes your thinking power.
Why is it, you think, that so many discoveries have shocked people?
Because they make people feel unsafe. Every human being, like every animal, wants to live in what is felt to be a safe environment, an environment where you won't be exposed to unexpected perils. Now, when a man tells you that something you've always believed was in fact not true, it gives you a frightful shock, and you feel, oh, I don't know where I am. When I think I'm planting my foot upon the ground, perhaps I'm not. And it gets into a terror.
Because this really affects discoveries in the realm of thought rather than in practical science. I mean, nobody minds if somebody invents a machine that will go to the moon.
Well, no, but they do mind, at least some people mind, though not as many as I should have expected, a machine which will destroy the human race, which is also part of science.
Yes, that is rather a different thing, isn't it? I mean, many new discoveries, say, like television, haven't really shocked people.
Well, that's a new invention. But the discoveries upon which new inventions are based very often have effects in the realm of thought as opposed to the realm of technique. And those are generally rather shocking to most people.
Do you think that Sarah's public opinion has stopped many people from doing good and sensible things?
Yes, it has a very profound effect, especially in times of excitement, when there's a great deal of mass hysteria about. A great many people are terrified of going against mass hysteria, with the result that bad things triumph in a way they shouldn't.
Do you think it applies to scientists and artists?
Yes, I think so. Scientists have the prerogative that they're sometimes able to prove that they're right. An artist can't prove that he's right. He can only hope that other people would think so. So I think the artist is in a greater difficulty than the scientist. But the scientist undoubtedly in the modern world is in a difficulty because he may make discoveries that are inconvenient to the government. And in that case, he'd get into trouble.
Oh, do you think he couldn't get away with it in the Western world?
He might or might not. It would depend partly upon his eminence, partly upon the degree of proof that he had, and partly upon the degree of inconvenience that it would cause to the administration.
Well, what about people who are, in a sense, thinkers and not strictly either artists or scientists devising practical things?
Well, of course, that depends. The thinker, certainly, a great many thinkers do take care not to express in any public way opinions which will bring them obloquy.
What about people outside those categories?
Take a very notable case which happened in America after the First World War. There were two men, Sacco and Vanzetti, who were accused of murder. evidence was quite inadequate. And after they'd been condemned, a small body of people was appointed to look into the evidence, among whom was the president of Harvard. And he and the others judged that the men were guilty, and they were executed. And I think everybody who looked into the evidence at all impartially thought that it was not such as should have led to a condemnation.
But what amount of liberty ought with a sacrifice?
Well, I do think that the preservation of social order is essential. You must have, if you can, a world in which people don't steal, in which they don't kill each other, and so forth. And to some degree, you secure that internally by means of the police. And I think those sort of limitations on liberty are quite necessary, especially in a very crowded community. And the world in general is more crowded than it was. And I think certain national liberties, which in the past were immensely valued, have become harmful.
Do you think any new limitations on liberty are needed?
Yes, certainly limitations on national liberty are needed. And there are some things that are absurd. The arguments that socialists used in favor of nationalizing natural resources have now become arguments in favor of internationalizing natural resources. The most obvious example is oil. It's a little absurd that a very small territory, which happens to have a great deal of oil on its territory, should be the sole possessor of that oil.
Do you think liberties need expanding?
Liberties need enlarging in the mental sphere, and if anything, diminishing in the, what I call the possessive sphere.
Thank you, Lord Russell.